This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to episode 49 of the Women's Running Podcast. I'm Esther Newman, editor of Women's Running, and in this episode, I speak to Jess Judd, British 5,000-metre champion and soon-to-be Olympian. Jess is on the plane to Tokyo any minute now, I think, and I am so excited about watching her race while she's there. She's due to be running the double, the 5,000 and the 10,000 metres. She talks to me here about her modest start with running, her dad's love of the sport and how his enthusiasm was infectious, how she took to it like a duck to water, falling in love with both track and cross country. I ask her what it's like to be picked for the Olympics and how she trains for it, given the demands of a very busy schedule. She's also currently studying for a PhD and she has the not insignificant task of planning a wedding alongside that. She tells me about that, about her thoughts on equality in cross country, how she gets used to race day nerves and performing in front of crowds, and what it was like to meet her hero, Joe Pavey. Jess is sponsored by Hoka, so I also ask how that came about and what kit she enjoys running in the most. She's an extremely talented runner, and we can't wait to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Fingers crossed for Jess. Podcast listeners can claim the best discount we have for membership to Women's Running, which is 35% off. That's less than $2.95 a month. And for that, you get our brilliant magazine and you also get loads of money off the sorts of stuff you love, like kit, nutrition and class memberships. Enter WRPOD at the checkout at shop.womensrunning.co.uk for your discount. Come and join Women's Running. We'd love to have you with us.
It's so exciting to be able to speak to you, especially after, well, we'll get on to it. I'll shush.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to do, yeah, because especially when you can't see that many people, so it's a bit like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah, something a bit different, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah,
although we're all kind of opening up now, aren't we? So
yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, it's going to be weird. I think when I get back from Tokyo, it'll be like completely different than when I left.
So, yeah, you know what? I think that might be in fact, if it's okay with you, I might ask you a question from much further down my list of questions, which is about lockdown. How has lockdown been for you?
It was difficult at first, obviously, because we couldn't use like the gyms, or we had the track that closed, so we weren't able to use that. So I didn't get on the track till mid-April. So that was really difficult, like trying to prepare for a race. And also we didn't know when the races were going to start. It was kind of like, you know, I tend to do a lot of road races through the winter and none of them were happening. So it was really difficult. But yeah, we converted our garage into a gym. We basically just used like an industrial estate instead of a track. So we were running around there for a good couple of months. And we just pretty much tried to do all the basics right and just get as much done as we could and not put any pressure on it. And yeah, if you'd have told me in April that I'd have made the Olympics, I wouldn't have believed you, because it was just such a weird sort of setup, and it was really difficult to plan. So yeah, I'm glad it's gone well, but luckily I live like and train with my fiance, so we had like just running together. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot easier, so I didn't have to do it all on my own, but it was just the two of us really. So yeah. It's been, yeah, it's nice to finally like accomplish something after like the really rocky start.
Yeah, I did having spoken to some other athletes, I did realize that it was less the gym and more the track.
Yeah. But
not having that, and it was just like, yeah, what do you do, how do you replicate that, you know? It's, that must be so tricky.
Yeah, it was more, you know, like when if you have a track, you know exactly how far you're running, which it sounds really like simple, but when we were on the road, we'd like measure it out, but it was very difficult to know if we were measuring it right, or you know, if your GPS was getting it right. Mm. So there were a couple of times we'd run reps and be like, oh my goodness, we're so much slower than yeah. I want to be, and then you kind of hope that it's because your GPS hasn't got it right. But yeah, when we got back on the track, it was so much nicer because you knew exactly how far you were running and you could kind of just knuckle down and get like the reps done. But yeah, in the winter it was really hard.
Yeah, I bet. So let's like cycle back right to the beginning, because I mean, you know, you are this amazing athlete. You are now about to become an Olympian. This is rather exciting. Well, you are an Olympian. You started breaking records when you were just 14, is that right?
14? Yeah, so like, yeah, the junior races, and I think I did like 800, 1500s when I was younger, and just happened to run fast, I think, for my age. So it kind of, I don't know, came, it just, I don't know, it feels like I've always been running. So every now and then it sort of dawns on me what I've achieved. But I'm lucky that I started when I did, because I feel like I've got the whole like roller coaster of, you know, it going well, not having some good years, and then coming back. It kind of makes you appreciate it when it goes well again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but because you started running at such a young age, I mean, I know lots of girls do, but I mean, I'm fascinated by this because it's not part of my history. So what I wanted to know was like, how do you train for those things? How do you do your training while you're also at school? How does that fit in?
Yeah, so I think I started running when I was probably about 10. My dad used to do a lot of marathons and half marathons, and so I used to get dragged along, and there'd always be like a fun run. And I think I did like a couple of those, and then entered like a 5K race. And there was someone from a club. I joined Thurrock Harriers as my first club, and there was someone from that club there who kind of just got me into it. And said like, come down to club nights. And I was really lucky that, you know, the club nights were like 6 o'clock, so you have like your normal school day. And then I was very lucky that my dad would drive me there after work, and we would just train. It started off at like 3 times a week, so it, you know, when you're younger you don't need to do quite as much. It's more like just about enjoying it and being in a group and just running with friends. So that's kind of what I did, and just fit it around my schoolwork really. I just didn't really go to parties or anything as I was growing up, or you know, I didn't socialize quite as much at school, like after school. And then probably when I was around like my A levels, that's when you really start to notice that your lifestyle was very different. A lot of people, you know, like if we went to like they had the prom that I couldn't go to because I had a race. It's things like that, you know, that you start noticing that you can't quite socialize as much. But it's always been a part of my life, so it's never really, you know, been a problem to me. I really like running, and I have my own like circle of friends that are runners, so we kind of all have the same problems.
Yeah So you don't feel like you've missed out at all on that?
No,
sort of stuff?
I think when I went to university, I spent a year just, I think I felt a bit drained from the sport, so I've been doing it for a couple of years, and I'd sort of reached that top level in probably 2013, and I ended up going to university in 2014. And I think I've been injured a bit, and I just felt a bit drained from the whole thing. So I kind of had that year at university where I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to be a student and enjoy myself. And then after doing that for a year, I realized actually I prefer running. Like I really like running and pushing myself in that way. So I had my year of sort of socializing, and then decided that I wanted to get back into it and, just start a new, chapter really.
Yeah. And I mean, you talk about your dad as well, but, you know, doing his marathons and half marathons and things. Is your whole family quite sporty?
Yes. So, yeah, my dad has always been really sporty. And so, yeah, I've got him to blame really for getting involved. And then my stepmom and stepsister, they also ran, and my sister runs as well. So it's kind of like a big family of runners. But we always used to laugh with my mum because she would just sort of hold the bags if she came along. So she's the one that just never really ran, but has always like just supported and kind of, when you run quite as much as like we do and it's like part of our lives, it becomes part of everyone's lives, whether they want to run or not. You know, it's about trying to get dinner in before you can train, so my mum had to deal with all of that. So yeah, I'm very lucky for like my family to all sort of encompass running.
That's lovely. So tell me about your records, because you know, you started smashing them from a very young age, so I want to know all about those, because that started when you were really quite young, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think when I was like under 13, under 15, you had like the all-time like junior records and British records for the 1500, and it was kind of like, I remember my dad saying, oh, this is the time that so-and-so's ran, but it was quite nice. He never really put any pressure on me to like run that fast. It just happened to be that I was running well, and like some of the races went perfectly, and yeah, I got like I think the all-time record for the 1500, and it was just one of those things that just sort of happened. And a lot of people started taking notice, and when I went up to sort of under 17, under 20 again, like the 800 meter records, I think I was second Keely Hodgkinson's got the under 20 record now as well. So it's kind of weird to think back to when I was an 800 meter runner, like striving to break 2 minutes, and to see other people coming through and doing that now is nice, because it makes me feel a bit more connected to it, because I feel like the 800 days have truly gone for me. So
is that what happens? Is it as you get older you go longer? Is that a thing?
It's how I found it. I think some people just like the 800 that little bit more, and so wanted to stick at it. But just for me, it felt so short. So I felt that if I was traveling the world, I wanted to do it for more than 2 minutes of running. I used to get so nervous before that, like, I wouldn't get in a good position and I'd waste all my training. So for me, it became moving up to the 1500. And then after the 1500, I watched the 5K at like the World Championships, and I thought, oh, I'd really like to do that. And then when I watched the 10K, I had exactly the same feeling. I was like, I really want to be in that 10K. And that's kind of what I just built my training around, like just the races that I wanted to do and I wanted to be at. And I've gradually just got longer and longer.
But you do cross country as well, don't you? What made you do that as well? And it is the other thing I want to know is the training different for track and cross country?
Yeah, so I think it's weird. When I feel like in better track shape, I feel in worse like cross country shape. I think for the cross country, you have to be good at running on the grass or on the mud, or, you know, it's more like the sessions are more sort of a slog to get through, you know, like you need to be strong as opposed to fast. So that's why I tend to do the cross country in the winter, just because I feel like I really build up my like strength base, and the mileage is high. And you just have to run that. It's a little bit slower, so it doesn't feel as intense all year round. I think if I was to go indoors, I feel like I would just put too much pressure on myself to run fast all year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice thing with cross country, is that the time doesn't really matter. It's about how you do in the race. So for me, I just love it as well. And I love the fact it's under 13s all the way up to, you know, seniors. There's a whole range of, you know, ages and people, and it's a whole day, you know, like you get there in the morning, the under 13 girls starting, and then right, the last event is probably like the senior men, and you just think it's a whole like range of ages that are all doing the same thing. I really like the cross country, but it definitely makes me tougher. And I think again, like with lockdown, it was really hard not having that and not having those races just through the winter, because training can be quite depressing in the winter. You know, the weather's rubbish if it's snowing, and just to have a race on the horizon is always quite nice to get you through it. So not having that was difficult, but I still did all the cross-country training. I just didn't have any of the races.
So which do you prefer then, cross-country or track?
I'd say I prefer the track, just because I don't, just because I feel faster, you know, like I love the cross country, but even if I have a great cross country race, sometimes if it's really muddy and tiring, I just think, oh, that wasn't even that good. Yeah. Whereas when it clicks on the track, it just feels effortless and it's lovely. Yeah. But I don't think I've ever had that on a cross country.
And with cross country, so this is kind of quite a big question, but where do you sit on the whole kind of equal distance thing with cross country? You know, that's been sort of bubbling up for quite a few years now. I was just wondering, you're right in the middle of it, so I'm wondering how you feel about it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, because we saw, like, the, I think it was British Athletics saying, oh, that they were going to equalise distances, and that was the first we I heard about it. So I hadn't heard too much about, you know, the for and against. So I actually signed the letter just to say that there should be, you know, a debate about it and to ask people. For me, I don't really mind what I race over the cross country. Like, I could race anywhere from 8 to 10K. I'm quite happy with anything. I notice it a little bit more because obviously my fiance is in the men's race, and so he'll tend to run anywhere from 10 to like 12K in the winter. So I know from the men's point of view that they don't want it to get shorter. They kind of want the races to stay exactly the same for them. So it makes it really difficult because, you know, you don't want to keep increasing the distances for the women and maybe discouraging junior athletes. That's my only fear, is that if we ended up racing over 12K as senior women, it would mean as you extrapolate down, the junior women would have to run a lot more. And I think for me, when I was running like 5K as a junior, that was doable for me. I think if I was running, say, 8K, I don't know whether I would have done it. It's one of those things, it's difficult. Because it's how it's set at the moment, people have just got used to running that distance. If we were to start again from scratch and have no prior knowledge of what everyone was running, I think it would be very different. But because you've kind of been nurtured to run over a set distance, to then suddenly run 3K more as a junior is quite difficult. So I think it is one of those things that, whatever happened, as long as there was a discussion that was had with junior athletes, like officials, volunteers that were going to be out there all day to come up with some solution, then I think that's fine. But I think sometimes we forget that by changing one thing, it can affect a different thing. So as long as, I don't know, as long as it's sort of talked about, I think I don't really mind what happens. I just would hate for someone to miss out on cross country because they thought it was too far at a younger age. So I'm hoping that with the debate that's happening, we'll be able to work out exactly the best way forward. But for me, I kind of just want cross country races back in any way, in any shape or form. I've missed it this year.
Yeah, I can understand that. So tell me about 2020, because it just went brilliantly for you, didn't you? The kind of the 5,000 meter British champion in that incredible time. How did you train for that, and how did that feel on the day?
Yeah, on the day it just sort of clicked again. It was one of those races you kind of hope that you're going to feel good as it gets quicker and quicker. When the race sort of starts, you kind of, you know, it's going to ramp up in intensity, you know, it's going to get faster. And I think that's always the fear, is that when it does kick on, that you can't go with it. So for it to all to come together was, yeah, amazing. Training has kind of been, it's been boring. It's been lots of boring reps, so say like K 1200 mile reps on the track, just getting used to running laps on laps. I think for me, that's the most important, is like trying to mentally prepare for, say, like five laps to go in a 5K, and especially in a 10K. I just wanted to get used to running, you know, lap after lap, really. So the training hasn't been that exciting. It's just been boring reps and tiring. But it's sort of, yeah, come into its own. When I saw four laps to go on the 5K, I just thought, I've done this so many times. It's been like some running joke as well. Like my fiance, when I see 1200 meters to go, I think I've done so many 1200 meter reps. So it feels so much better. And yeah, I kind of just prepared for that and hoped that I had enough speed left. And the girls made it a really hard race. It was, you know, the 5K has probably been the most competitive it's been in a while, which is always good because it pushes you on more. So yeah, I was just really lucky and happy to come out with the win and to make my Olympic team. And it's always nice as well when you're racing against such good people, because it just pushes you to do things that you wouldn't probably believe you could.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's it like being picked for the Olympics. I just can't imagine. What is that like?
It's a bit surreal. I think because I got picked in the 10K first. So when I did the 10K trials, that was completely a shock to me. I didn't expect to go in a 10. The whole point of doing a 10K this year was just to see how I found it. So when I got picked in that and ran like the time and qualified, I just thought, this is unbelievable. And it kind of changed my whole season then, because after that, I decided that, you know, I was then going to go for the five as well. I had nothing to lose. And it kind of gave me that little bit of confidence that the year was going really well. But yeah, it just feels really surreal. I think because it's only every 4 years, or in this case, five, it's so rare, you know, like for everything to go right in a year. It's hard. I've never got it right when it like has fallen before. So for it to happen in two events, I just thought, I can't quite believe it still.
And then, I mean, then what happens? Because I guess it must be a sort of like a snowball effect in terms of like, you know, suddenly you're kind of, you're on various sort of email threads and WhatsApp groups, and you have to be kind of, you have to wear particular clothing and be photographed doing this, that and the other. I mean, does it feel quite kind of unreal?
Yeah, it is really strange. I think because you kind of, well, I don't allow myself to think about anything like that, because I always think, oh, it's just take one race at a time. And if you qualify, you qualify. Mm. So after the 10K, when that happened, I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, like I've got all this to plan out. You know, I'm studying a PhD as well. So it would become like try and take 2 months off of that because I'm going to be away for that long. Mm. So just bridges that I hadn't crossed that I was then having to, you know, really rush to try and work out what was going to happen. And yeah, it was strange. On the Saturday, I raced a 10K and qualified. Then on the Wednesday, I was at Kitting Out. So it was a really quick turnaround, and it was just the most surreal thing that actually picking out like your Olympic kit. I just thought, you know, that you dream of these moments for so long, and then for it to happen. I just remember at the end of that week, just being emotionally like exhausted just from the highs, and then obviously having to work everything out and try and plan the next couple of months. It's hard to get back into training after something like that, because you kind of, you peak for that moment, and mm-hmm. you hope to make the team, and then it kind of doesn't, you don't comprehend what will happen once you have made it. It's then like straight back into training, straight back into trying to peak for the major champs. And yeah, it's, I feel like it's sort of settled down now, and it feels a bit more real, whereas yeah, before it was really surreal.
Yeah, I can imagine. And do you have friends that are on the team with you?
Yeah, so it's really strange. Like when I did like the World Youths in, I think I was at 2011, and Katie Snowden, who's in the 1500, yeah, she was there. We both did the 800 there. So, I mean, to say like 10 years later, we're both going, but yeah, Katie in the 15 and me in the 5. Mm. It just, yeah, you would never believe that. If someone was to tell us in 2011 that, oh, you're going to make the Olympics in 10 years, I still don't think we believe it. So it's really nice, yeah, to have people that have kind of been on a similar journey as well, and been like good juniors and sort of come through into the senior ranks is really nice. And I'm just looking forward to getting out there and just being able to plan as well. I think after the last year we've had, it's been so difficult to plan just anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to getting out there and seeing what happens.
And I mean, it seems to sound as if it's all like really mutually supportive, like between GB teammates. Is that your feeling as well?
Yeah, I think so. Especially it's one of those, when I did the 10K, I raced some 10Ks in California. So I did one, and there was Amy Eloise as well. She did the 10K and she just beat me, but we both just missed a time in a 10. And it was one of those, on the start line, you know, we wouldn't speak to each other, but afterwards it was like nothing had happened, and you're just really, you know, happy for someone to have run so well and to be in the same situation where you think, oh, we've run a massive PB, but we've just missed out on the Olympic time. So when we come back to Birmingham, and obviously I got it and then Amy didn't, it was hard, because you just, you know, like afterwards I was so happy, but you have to obviously be mindful of other people. And I really like Amy and Verity as well, you know, like who we were battling in the 5K. And it's one of those, on the start line, you know, you don't talk to anyone, you've got your own like thing, you're trying to race yourself. And then afterwards it becomes, you know, everyone is supportive of each other. And I think without good competition, we wouldn't be in a good position ourselves. So it's one of those that you want to be as supportive as you can, without, yeah, jeopardizing yourself. But afterwards, it's just nice, you know. Like, I think everyone in the distance running, everyone's trained really hard. It's been a really hard year for everybody, so you kind of all feel the same, you know, like you all understand what everyone's gone through. So yeah, it's really good competition. And especially, I mean, Amy and Verity as well are cross country runners, so we've all kind of gone through the same, you know, seasons and things like that. So it's going to be interesting going forward, because I think it's just the most competitive it's ever been. So it means you just can't relax. You have to keep pushing.
Yeah. No, I bet. I mean, you must be so excited. When do you fly out?
On the 15th of July. Yeah. So yeah, it's come around really quickly, and it's exciting.
It's incredibly exciting. Incredibly. So how's the training going in the weeks leading up to that?
So I've got a couple of sessions that I want to hit before I go out there. So it was kind of like, we've got, I think it's about 10 days now till I go, so I've got a couple of sessions to do, and have like luxury of people being around, because I think that's one thing that I've got to get used to, is when I go to Tokyo, you know, no one else can come with me. It's kind of me on my own, just as part of the team. Which will be strange, because obviously for a year I've kind of been in my own little bubble with my own little support team. So moving away from that, it's a little bit scary. But you're there to do a job, so I feel like all the hard work's already been done, so you kind of just got to get out there and, you know, finish it off, really. So yeah, I've got a couple of sessions here. I'm currently in the gym in the garage, like trying to get used to the heat, so I've got a treadmill in there and some heaters. Just trying to run and get used to it being a little bit warmer, and then we'll literally fly out. Probably have another couple of sessions just to get used to the weather and stuff, and then start tapering. And then once you're in the village, it feels very real then.
So how long do you have between getting there and your first proper race? I mean, how much time do you have to acclimatise?
Yes, we fly out on the 15th, and then my first race is on the 30th. So it's just over 2 weeks. So not too long, but enough time that you can sort of get used to the weather, and again, just try not to push too hard in the weather as well. I think that's something that I have to come to terms with, because obviously if I was here, I have certain times for sessions. I think it's about being mindful that might change a bit as I get used to it, you know, like, and try and be a bit more adapted at trying to work out the weather and trying to see what happens.
How hot is it going to be out there?
At the moment, I've got my garage set to, like, I think 35 degrees. So just to prepare, I think it'll probably be in the 30s. It's more the humidity, I think, that is just the difficult one. So yeah, I think as long as I can prepare the best I can, then the races are in the evening, so hopefully it won't be too bad. But it's just one of those things. It's the unknown, I guess. I've never been to Japan before, so it's kind of a bit surreal to be trying to work out what's going to happen when I get there.
Yeah. I mean, you've never been to Japan before. I mean, will you have a chance to have a look around outside of the Olympic Village, or is it going to be a bit of a whistle-stop tour?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very unique Olympics, in the fact that we're kind of stuck in bubbles, and we like go into the village a couple of days before, and then I think after our races we have like a couple of days, and then we have to come back. So it's very much we're there literally just to do a job and then get back. But I think it's one of those, you know, I'm lucky it's going ahead. I was always so worried that I qualify and it not happen. So for me, it's like, as long as it happens and I can get on the start line, and that's fine, and I'll just do whatever I have to do around it.
And I'm asking really stupid questions, and it's because I've never been to the Olympics before. How do you make sure that you get the food that you need, that you're used to?
Oh yeah, no, it's a good point actually, because I think when I was younger, it's kind of when you go away, you suddenly realize that things are different. It's not how you have set up your day before. So I always try and take a couple of snacks with me, or, you know, like cereal bars or things, just in case there isn't really much around. So, you know, sort of like sports nutrition bars as well. I just pack my suitcase full of those, just in case, because I love snacking, and I find that, you know, if we have like 3 set meals but nothing in between, that seems like such a long day for me. So I try to take as many of little snacks as I can, and I always take like my porridge sachets as well, just in case the breakfast or something is different. But yeah, it's just about making sure you're prepared and taking some bits out there with you just so you kind of know what's going on.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the other thing that you're taking with you is the fact that you're, I mean, you're now supported by Hoka, aren't you? Which is like a huge development and change to what you've been running in before. So this is amazing. I can see you've got your logo on there, which is marvelous. So how on earth does, how does that happen? How do you get supported by a big brand like Hoka?
Yeah, it's I'm very lucky, yeah, to be supported by them. I think it was one of those before, I've had sponsorships before, so I've had I've gone through different brands, and I was approached by Hoka at the start of this year, and it just felt right. You know, like I'd seen like the shoes around as well. I'd seen, you know, people racing in certain shoes, and I'd seen people training and turning up to the track, and I'd be like, oh, what are those? They're really cool. So it kind of, I knew about the brand before, but it just feels like it was meant to be. I was really lucky to get their sponsorship at the start of this year, obviously, but with all the pandemic and, you know, the uncertainty that was going on, it just made my life so much easier, because I thought, I've got the support of a great brand that, you know, want the best for me. And honestly, if it wasn't for their support, I wouldn't have gone to America at the start of the year. So I went at the end of April and was out there for pretty much half of May, and if it wasn't for Hoka, I wouldn't have made that trip, because I just wouldn't have been able, you know, like, to fund it. So I decided to go, and then ended up running the Olympic time in the 5k out there and just missing the 10k time, and that kind of changed my whole season, because I decided that, you know, I could give the 10k another shot. I'd already got the 5k, so it became, the rest of the year was just building up to the trials, and I wasn't having to chase times or anything. So I was really lucky to have that, and especially with shoe technology is a massive talking point in the sport at the moment, and to have a brand supporting you and giving you access to the shoes, you know, that encouraged me to train harder and smarter, because you're getting that bit more recovery. And yeah, the spikes are another big talking point. Everyone's trying to find out the fastest spike, and it just, I'm really lucky that I've responded really well to the Hoka spikes, like the long distance and the middle distance ones. And I've just found that this year is, you know, I've just run PBs pretty much over 5, 10K, and even my 15 hasn't been too bad. Like it's one of those years where I feel like I'm just sort of progressing. So yeah, without them, it would have completely, my year would be completely different. So it's just one of those things where I think it must happen for a reason. And I'm really lucky that I've got them, yeah, behind me and just supporting me. And yeah, I love it. And I just love the shoes, and I love the brand as well. It's nice to be supported by like a friendly brand.
Yeah, they're definitely that. Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was, I mean, because you've mentioned it before, but you're also studying for a PhD, which, you know, you're studying for a PhD, you're representing GB at the Olympics. You know, there's quite a lot of stuff going on. And I think sometimes it's, you know, a lot of us don't realize that, you know, we watch the Olympics and we don't realize that there are day jobs, that all these athletes are doing something else during the day, you know, and that this, you know, that they're not, you know, not professional, they're not being paid to do what they do. And I just think that's absolutely amazing. Can you tell me about your PhD? What are you doing, and when are you going to get it?
Yeah, so my PhD is in tissue engineering, so it's looking at regenerative medicine. So I'm basically creating a mechanical model of skeletal muscle injury. So I started in 2018, sort of October, and so I'll have 1 year left in September, and then I should finish writing up in 2023. So I'm hoping that keeps going as it's been going. It's been nice to have another distraction apart from running, especially if a session doesn't go very well or a race doesn't go very well. It's nice to have a different outlet to focus on, because sometimes you can become quite self-absorbed in, you know, and get into a downward spiral if running's not going as well as you want. So to have something else to focus on has been like a lifeline to me. And obviously this year it's kind of had to take a bit of a backseat, because obviously what with travel, restrictions when you come back and having to quarantine and stuff, it's taken quite a bit of time out. So again, yeah, I'm really thankful to like my supervisors who have kind of, they've had to deal with all the logistics of it. And, you know, when it was always in the plan if I did make the Olympics and we cross that bridge when we came to it. So a couple of weeks ago, it was suddenly like, oh, okay, now we need to really plan to take, you know, 2 months off. And again, that's where I'm really lucky with Hoka as well, because I'll have to suspend my studies for a couple of months. Having their support means, you know, that financially I'm okay, and it doesn't matter that I'll have to suspend that. So they kind of intertwine really nicely. But I'm hoping that it shouldn't affect my end date too much. You know, I'm going to take 2 months off for the Olympics. So it'll probably push my end date back a little bit. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back into that afterwards. It'll be nice to think about something other than running when I get back.
Yeah. What are you hoping to do with it?
What, with my PhD? I'm not sure. I've really enjoyed the research. I think it was one of those things when I started my undergrad, I never thought I'd stay in academia. I kind of just thought I would do my undergrad and then probably that would find a job. So I did my dissertation in the same sort of area, like tissue engineering, and then basically got straight on the PhD. So I missed out the master's year and just went on to the PhD. So after that, I kind of would like to get into teaching. I do a couple of modules where I just like assist like lecturers and teachers and just help out, and I've really enjoyed it. You know, like it makes me feel really old though when I'm teaching, you know, like 18-year-olds, and I think, my goodness, it was so long ago that I was starting like my undergrad journey. But yeah, I really enjoy it, and I enjoy just trying to help other people. So the PhD, I love learning new things all the time. You know, like it's not one, like you don't just have one book where you can sort of learn everything you need to know. It changes all the time. And I think it's been good for me not to go linear as well. You know, like one week it can be great, and then the next week I'll get no results at all. And it'll be like, oh, you have to just adapt to it. So it's helped me in that respect. But I'd like to stay in that field if I can, and just keep researching and just learning more. I think I've learned so much in, say, 3 years, and I'd just like to keep that going, really.
Yeah, sure. And I mean I do realize, and I might be wrong here, I do realize that like right now that your running is centered on like 1 month right now. Yeah. But I was just wondering if you've got some kind of like overarching ambition for your running for the next sort of few years.
Yeah, I think this has always been the one that has sort of escaped me. You know, like the Olympics has always been the one event really that I haven't done. So I've been really lucky to go to Commonwealths, World Champs, Europeans, but I've never made an Olympics. So for me it was about trying to tick this box off. But I'd always kind of envisioned it might not go as well as it has. So my aim going into next year is it's a massive year. We've got the World Champs, Europeans and Commonwealth Games, and it was actually one of the reasons why we decided to get married at the end of next year. So we were going to get married in September 2022, just because it's such a big year with regards to sporting competitions. So my aim would be to just go there and, you know, like try and keep the progression I've got over the 5 and the 10k. And then I think going even further, I'd like to try and do some half marathons maybe in the winter. So I still keep the cross country going, but just work on my distance running that little bit more. And I wanted to do the New York half marathon in 2020. It was March 2020. And literally 2 days before we flew is when the like COVID pandemic started.
Yeah.
So I never got to do it. So that's one of those things I want to do. I'd like to do a half marathon finally. I think it'll be like 3 years or something after I was destined to do it. So yeah, I'm excited to just see how it progresses and at what distance I feel most comfortable, really.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, because you're talking then about all the kind of the events that you'll be doing next year, fingers crossed, but how do you, because I just can't imagine it. I can't imagine having to perform at that standard. Well, I can't imagine that full stop, but I can't imagine having to perform, but with this whole audience of people looking down at you, which must be, and to be on that particular day. So the kind of the nerves, I can't even begin to imagine the nerves. What kind of techniques do you use to kind of to help that, to make sure it doesn't impact your running?
Yeah, no, it's yeah, it's difficult because obviously you kind of dream about that, like, getting to that stage, and you think, oh, I can't wait to perform. And then I think it was in 2017 when the World Champs were in London, I remember walking out and just seeing like a full stadium and thinking that, oh my goodness. And I think it was one of those when, you know, it pans across and people started cheering. I just remember like my hair to my arms standing on end. Like, I was so, you know, I couldn't take it in. And it just become one of those things where you just got to stay as composed as you can and think, even though the crowd and everything is there, you do this day in, day out. You know, you train day in, day out for this moment. And I think not making the teams has made me more appreciative of it. You know, in 2015, 2016, I watched the World Champs at home. I watched the Olympics at home. And I thought I would give anything to be there competing. So when I am on that start line, even though I'm getting really nervous, I think I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I wouldn't want to be at home watching this. This is what you train for. So you kind of just have to get used to the nerves a little bit, and just remember that all the hard work is already done, and all you can do is go out there and give it your best. And if you give it your best, then you can't be disappointed.
Oh yeah, fair enough. Sage advice, I think. which of those races then do you have been the most memorable for you, whether that's positive or negative? Which of your races mean the most?
I think when I went to the World Champs in 2017, I think that was memorable for different reasons, and the fact that obviously it was a home crowd. I'd never heard anything like the noise when I was running around. It sort of followed me around. And then I think because I hadn't made the major champs the 2 years before, it meant so much to me to actually be on that start line again. So I think 2017 kind of always sticks out as well, because it was like an hour train journey from my home for all my family to go and watch. So everybody was there watching. It was lovely. But yeah, there's definitely been, you know, races over the last couple of years that you kind of look back on. Like, I think the World Universities in Italy, that was in 2019, and that was the first like major championship I'd ever won. So I loved the fact that, you know, in the 5K, I managed to get it all right again on the day. And I think that sort of gave me the confidence that even though things hadn't been as smooth sailing before, that if you can just get it right on the one day, then yeah, it kind of changes your whole confidence level. So yeah, I'm excited to see, hopefully, if I can like add to that. But yeah, it's always nice to look back and see how far you've come, and if you enjoy it as well, because you put an awful lot of work in for, you know, not that much time. You know, like even in the 5K, it'll be like 15 minutes of running and you think you've done miles and miles. So every race is kind of important just to get there and to be fit and healthy and just give it a go.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of memorable races, do you have some good memories of races that other people have run that you've watched? I mean, have you been inspired by watching other athletes?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was really surreal for me. Like a couple of weeks ago, I did a 1500 at Watford, and then I pacemate like the 5K, and Joe Pavey was in the race. And afterwards, you know, like just talking to someone who's like been through, like had the best, you know, like career in running, like to speak to, and she's just so nice as well.
She is lovely.
Yeah, to speak to Jo and actually just be able to pick her brains a bit, because she doubled in the 5 and the 10K in London 2012. So to talk to her about it and for her to just give me some really good advice. But I remember watching 2012 and watching her run around and just think she just looked effortless, you know, like, and I thought I'd love to be able to run a 5K, 10K looking like she did, because I always think I make it look hard work.
Yeah. Well, what kind of advice does Jo Pavey give you?
She just basically said, you know, because I said, oh, you know, you doubled in 2012, and I think the 10K was first in that instance, and then the 5K was second. So it was about trying to like recover, because I think that's when I qualified for both distances, it was kind of in my head, I didn't want to miss one, you know, like I wanted to do them both, but my main worry was that I wouldn't recover between the two. So trying to get some advice from her on how she recovered, how she found, because I always struggle after a 10K to walk a couple of days after, you know, I find it really hard. So she was basically saying that she thinks it's better, you know, the 10K being last, and try and work out how to recover from the 5Ks in between. So it was really nice. She's just got so much time for everyone as well, you know, like any age, if like people she was racing against wanted to, you know, talk to her about things, and she just had so much. And I think it's so important for the youngsters coming through to see people that are approachable, you know, like Jo, and to get some advice and things on how to, you know, cope with nerves and yeah, cope with like recovery. And I mean, she's had such a long career as well. And I mean, when she like won races, you know, after having children, you just think that's a sort of, you want to have a career just like her. You want to be, have that longevity. So yeah, it was lovely to be able to talk to her.
So like, if you could, like, put yourself into the future a little bit, and you've got a kind of a mini you coming up to you asking for advice, what advice would you give young girls in the, you know, 12, 13, 14, sort of coming up through the ranks? What have you learnt that you didn't know then?
I think for me, because I always used to get really competitive at a younger age, I think it's just natural, you know, that you see people running well and you want to compete with them. But I think if I could go like back, or yeah, if I could talk to someone who was trying to like come through as well at that age, I'd just say to just enjoy it. It sounds so like easy to say, but I think if you enjoy it, you have a longer career in store, you know, that you don't ever want to be forced to do something, or, you know, you should never feel like you're forced to go for a run, or, oh, I have to go to training today. You know, you want to be able to go, and you want it to be a nice environment so that you have a nice time. And I think that's something that's probably the last year has been really difficult, because obviously with group sessions that have stopped, or, you know, we haven't been able to train with as many people. So I think for me, it's about telling people to enjoy it and not to put too much pressure on at a young age, because hopefully you'll have a really long career, and, you know, you'll keep running like throughout the ages, really. But yeah, you just don't want to get too stressed too early, because I think I definitely was guilty of that. You know, like, I was always wanting to run faster. I always wanted to be better when I was younger. And I just, in races, you know, I kept pushing and pushing. And then sometimes then when it doesn't go so well, it feels like the world sort of like crumbling around you, because all you've known is, you know, getting better and better. So you kind of have to be, you know, used to disappointments, but know how to bounce back from them, you know, to see them as a learning curve rather than the end of the world.
Yeah, sure. Well, we're all going to be watching you at the end of July. I mean, I cannot wait. It's going to be so exciting. I'm just like, anyway, we've all got our fingers crossed. We're all going to be like really hoping that there's going to be, well, I just hope that you just really enjoy the experience, that you just have a ball and, you know, you run your very, very best. I just think it would be amazing to see you there on the track with all your teammates to be like, oh, it's Jess.
You know, I'm really excited. I think that's the thing. It's one of those things, is making it, like, that's part of like the hard part. And then you kind of, once you're there, it's the Olympics, and, you know, anything can happen. But yeah, I'm just excited to just get out there and have a good run, and, you know, as long as I try my best and I can't be disappointed.
Exactly. You're an Olympian now, so yeah.
Still feels weird.
Fingers crossed for the very lovely Jess. Come back next time for some me and Holly chat. This podcast was recorded over Zoom. The editor and composer was David Newman. Please hit like and subscribe. That way you won't miss the next episode. Podcast listeners can claim the best discount we have for membership to Women's Running, which is 35% off. That's less than $2.95 a month. And for that, you get our brilliant magazine, and you also get loads of money off the sorts of stuff you love, like kit, nutrition, and class memberships. Go to shop.womensrunning.co.uk and enter WRPOD at the checkout for your discount. Happy running.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.